Listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820 brings you The Catholic Doctors, discussing medicine in light of church teaching. And now, The Catholic Doctors with Dr. Michael Parker and Dr. Will Turek.
Welcome to The Catholic Doctors Show, a production of St. Gabriel Radio. I am Dr. Will Turek, your host, in the absence of Dr. Michael Parker, who is doing his first job, which is actually being a doctor, taking care of pregnant ladies. So we have in studio a blessing, Dr. Ashley Fernandez, MD, PhD, who is at Ohio State University, and his official title escapes me right at the moment, a part of the Bioethics Center. Right?
That's right.
Yep.
I'm the associate director for the Center for Bioethics.
Absolutely. That's a big title. And he's also working over at that Nationwide Children's Hospital as well as a staff pediatrician.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And we also have on the phone Dr. Tony Caruso, who is a recurrent guest here at St. Gabriel. And as I've said in previous shows, we are going to have all four of us, if Mike can get away from the surgical suite long enough, to actually have all four of us talk about pertinent topics related to medicine and ethics and all that kind of stuff once a month. So I'm really excited about this show. This is really cool. Welcome, Tony.
It's great to be here again. Always a pleasure to be with you guys, Will.
Awesome, awesome. So we sat around, virtually over the internet and decided that there's so many things going on in medicine these days that probably the most pertinent thing that we can deal with right now is the fact that doctors are being infringed upon their rights, their conscience rights, in order to be able to do practice their profession. And so, Dr. Fernandez, Ashley, you came up with this great article from First Things Journal, which is The Coming of Medical Martyrdom by a physician who's I believe Wesley Smith is an intensivist, right? He deals with a lot of end-of-life, a lot of difficult cases in the ICU, and he writes from a very interesting perspective. So you want to set this article up because this was your idea.
Sure. This is it's a very short article, and for the listeners out there, you can Google this. The title of the article is The Coming of Medical Martyrdom, and it's very short. You can read it in about 5 minutes, and it's in the journal First Things. And for those of you that don't know, First Things is a journal that looks at with sort of intelligent articles that range from the arts, politics, theology. It's ecumenical, so it's Roman Catholic, evangelical, includes Judaism and Islamic perspectives, but it is very respectful of traditional or faithful Catholicism. And this article essentially talks about how with the erosion of the Hippocratic Oath in medicine in the United States, you're also seeing a simultaneous erosion in the protection of conscience rights. And Dr. Smith goes on to elaborate on international laws and trends that have been happening with respect to the erosion of conscience rights, and some of it is very alarming.
It really is.
Truly. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I didn't really know, because the centerpiece of this article kind of takes some information out of the American College of OBGYN committee opinion from 2007, which basically suggests that OBGYNs and other physicians have a duty to basically send people to other doctors who would do things they don't want to do unless no one's around there, and then they're supposed to do what they don't want to do themselves.
Yeah, this Canadian case that they talked about indicates that in a province of Australia, in this Australian case, doctors are required to either perform an abortion if asked or to refer for abortion to a colleague who will provide the service. And
right.
From what Dr. Smith indicates when he was on a speaking tour there, he said that basically doctors are leaving this province of Australia in droves.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really – it's ironic that Dr. Smith talks about that too, because in that article from in the opinion piece written by the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, as well as in a mirroring piece written by the American Academy of Pediatrics just a couple of years later, they suggest in both of those ethical opinions that people who do not agree with things, they don't mention specifically abortion or contraception, but those are sort of the 800-pound gorillas in the room,
right,
that if you don't agree to do those things, that you should live in a place in which those things are readily available so that people's rights aren't infringed by your refusing to do those things. And I found that to be astonishing. I mean, nobody has ever told me in my adult life where I should live and not live.
And actually, I went looking for that because I found, you know, my poor ACOG doing this stuff. And so I wanted to see what the family practitioners did and the pediatricians did. So I actually found that paper from the pediatrics things. And actually, what I found, Ashley, very interesting is they also made some statement that they wanted to protect the rights of the physician who was choosing not to do the case, too.
Yes.
Did I read that wrong?
Yes. No, that's correct. They start out by saying that, but they argue that there are limits to those protections. And essentially, what they do say, they don't go as far as the Australians in Victoria, in the Victoria province, who say you have to perform that procedure. Although they do say you have to perform that, whatever the procedure is, in an emergency.
In an emergency. Right.
In an emergency. But they don't say you have to. But then they go on to say you must refer. So I think for your listeners, I think it's important because a lot of them are not doctors, just to understand that this the erosion of conscience rights is larger than not just – it's not just applies to physicians. It also applies to nurses and pharmacists. And there's kind of a cultural movement within academics to erode – that right. And part of the problem is that many students that I've had in my career have been, while they may be opposed to something like abortion, there's so much pressure on them that they feel like if they say, well, I'm personally opposed, I won't do it myself, but I'll refer, that makes everybody happy. It sort of goes back.
I'm sorry, Ashley, to update you, to interrupt you, but it goes back to basically the 1960s when Cardinal Cushing was basically talking about contraception and started this whole thing. Well, I would never do it or wouldn't be applicable to me, but I certainly can't tell somebody else they can't.
Yes.
You see?
Yeah. And in the case of physicians, it's worse because they are actually asking to facilitate. I mean, they are the gatekeeper.
Yeah.
So they are facilitating
right,
what they just said they wouldn't do themselves. And I think from the point of view of a student or from the point of view of a young learner who's trying to learn medicine, it's a very tempting proposition to accept. You feel like, okay, well, I'm saying that I'm opposed to abortion or contraception or whatever it is, or euthanasia or God knows what. And so you protect yourself, but you know what? I'll help some, even though I don't agree, I'll help someone else. Now, what that does for the student or for the young learner or young physician is it removes pressure from them, right? Because now now nobody's mad at them. In fact, pro-choicers love a person who will say, well, I'm personally opposed, but I'll refer you. They love that because that's no threat to them whatsoever. They still get the job done that they want, and you're still helping to facilitate that thing which you just had said a minute ago was wrong.
Well, you know, the thing that disturbs me as a gatekeeper, I am a primary care doctor, I'm a family doctor, and, you know, it's one thing to say, okay, well, you know, you're supposed to refer for an abortion or for other objectionable procedures or whatever. You know, so, okay, so I won't do that. You know, I won't perform it myself, and I'm not, I really don't want to refer either. So, you know, basically, the thing that is most disturbing or partially just as disturbing is that I have to give my blessing in order to get paid. You know, I mean, if this abortion is going to be approved, I have to give my stamp of approval one way or another. And so it's the, you follow the money. And so in essence, you know, not only do I have to be morally culpable for this, but I am also financially culpable for it as well. And it follows suit, and it bothers me that, you know, you're put on this eye of a needle, or this, you know, the edge of the sword.
Right. And I think, I think just to explain to the listeners out there, I think it's important. The Catholic Church has talked about this for several decades, and they're called principles of moral cooperation. Those go back hundreds of years. And essentially what they suggest is that when one acts to do something wrong, it is just as wrong to help to facilitate an act which you know to be morally wrong. And so in the referral process in medicine, what's happening is you're taking a physician who, although not sort of committing the act, is the only means by which the patient can then commit that act
themselves. It's just like, you know, you're convicted of the murder or the bank robbery or whatever when you're driving the getaway car.
Right.
You're still doing it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And so it really is, you know, putting us in a very, very untenable position. Further on in the article, it goes into some even more disturbing things. I mean, in Canada, you know, apparently they passed a law that requires that if someone comes to you and asks for euthanasia, that you have to provide it for them. You have no other means. You have to do it. This is a national law. The other disturbing thing about it is, though, and this is that kind of squishy part of the law, I guess, is that if you have objections to it, then it goes to your college, you know, as a physician. So your physician as a pediatrician, it would go to the American College of Pediatrics and mine. So, if you've got a problem with it, okay, well, we'll give you an out, maybe.
Well, it's one of these things. That the law in Canada was recent news. That happened just a couple of weeks ago, actually, and it was the Canadian Supreme Court who reversed in a 9-0 decision. They reversed an earlier ruling of them, which essentially paved the way to allow assisted suicide, not euthanasia, but assisted suicide,
right,
in Canada. And I think—
Thank you for the correction.
No,
I need
that's no
that.
Problem.
I need
that's
to be
no
more precise.
That's no problem. And I think the sort of draft ethics policy you were referring to is really hammering away at conscience protection in Canada. The referral to the college, I think, is disturbing because it actually mirrors something that happened in America in 2007 when the College of Obstetrics and Gynecology released their ethical opinion on conscience. What they attempted to do after they released that opinion was they attempted to link that opinion to the American Board of Obstetrics and Gynecology. In other words, in order to be boarded as an official, like having a, you know, be a board-certified
OBGYN,
you had to agree to their ethical opinions. Now, luckily for us, the Department of Health and Human Services at the time, under the Bush administration, blocked those efforts.
Right.
But that was just luck. or providence, if you might.
Well, yeah. And honestly, I suspect that that's all going to come back to haunt us all because, as your listeners may or may not know, if they're not doctors, all physicians now have to go through a pretty constant process of recertification over time. We do it annually. Some of us take tests periodically. But we all have to we don't just get one piece of paper and we're done. And at each one of those times, we have to kind of interact with our respective boards. And all it's going to take is another effort by a board somewhere, which is going to happen, that it's in a more permissive governmental scenario to have either the initial board certification or the recertification have exactly what Ashley just said the American College of OBGYN was trying to do. So
you know,
it's only a matter of time.
It really is. Now, you're listening to the Catholic Doctor Show on a production of St. Gabriel Radio. This is kind of a different sort of show than we're used to doing. Dr. Parker is in the operating room at the current time. So we brought in our crack team of ethicists and reproductive endocrinologists, Dr. Ashley Fernandez from Ohio State, as well as Dr. Tony Caruso from Chicago, reproductive endocrinologist. And we're talking about conscience protection of physicians, because ultimately, if conscience breaks down for physicians, it breaks down for all of us.
That's a great point, and I want to emphasize this to your listeners again, many of whom are not in the healthcare fields. Conscience is a right that is ours because we're human, not because we're doctors. It's based in our humanity and our nature as persons. And so whatever field you're in, if you are a devout Roman Catholic, you should think about the kinds of things and the kinds of policies they have and the kinds of regulations they have, and really assert your right to either do or not do those things which you believe are true. And if they go against your conscience, I would urge listeners to remember to just think about times in your life when you were forced to do something which you didn't want to do and how terrible that made you feel. This is how I talk to my friends who don't agree with me on the conscience issue, is have them just reflect on that, on a time when someone forced you to do something that you really didn't want to do and how bad you felt after it, or how badly you felt if you were coerced to do something and you thought about it later, you're like, man, that made me feel awful.
Yeah.
If they can grasp that, if they can grasp that simple concept, that's something you don't want in a doctor. Put it another way, what kind of doctor do you want for yourself? The kind of doctor that says, I know that abortion is bad for you and for your unborn baby, but because you want it, I'm going to give it to you anyway. Or do you want a doctor that says, you know what, I want to do what's right for you and your unborn baby, and even though you want this, I care about you too much, I can't do it, and I can't participate in you getting it. And I think if you pose that kind of question, most people will choose that second doctor.
Well, you have to speak the truth in love. I mean, the fact of the matter is, in anything. I mean, I was just on the way into the studio, I was listening to Father Larry Richards, and he was talking about a kid who comes to him who is at Cathedral Prep, where I'm sure we all know Father Larry is used to teach at a all-boys school in Erie, Pennsylvania. And the kid came back, and he says, oh, Father Larry, I think you're going to be upset with me because, you know, I got some bad news. And he goes, oh, yeah, did you get somebody pregnant? He says, no, but I think you won't like it. And he says, I'm living with my girlfriend, she moved in. And he spent the last, you know, 20 minutes explaining to this kid why being a man is the right thing to do. And if you love her immortal soul more than your own pleasure, then you will walk out on her and not live with her before marriage. And so the point is that we need to speak as physicians the truth we know. What's good for the human person, what's good for the human soul is, you know, staying away from abortion, not contracepting, not, you know, having suicide, you know, enter into our thoughts and things like that. Those are all things we try to get people to not do.
Right. And we should emphasize that the things which the Catholic Church has talked about as good medicine are not just, I mean, sorry, are that's good morality is also happens to be in the design of God's world, good medicine as well.
Exactly.
These are not simply religious objections in the face of what would otherwise be good medicine.
Right.
These happen to be both medical and moral reasons for opposing something. Right. And I think when a doctor, family doctor, pediatrician, OBGYN says, you know, I won't do an abortion and I won't facilitate you getting one, that is not just a religious decision made because we love Jesus and his church. It's a decision that's also because it's bad. Abortion is bad medicine. We know it's a fact that it's bad medicine for at least one person, which is the unborn child.
And potentially both of them.
And potentially both.
Potentially both, yes.
Now, Tony, back to your point. You know, you said that we're all in, each of us by our respective boards are obliged to comply with all these various regulations, ongoing education and so forth like that. I just sat for my boards in the fall, and I felt like there was somebody in the room while I was taking the test. It was very strange. I had recertified a couple other times, and this was the first time that I really felt that test was somehow askew, you know, just not quite right. Yeah, I mean, have you felt that way as well?
Well, no, I'm going to take my first sit-down research this year, but I know from the experience of others that I know, it is exactly that way. You sit in a room, and it's in, I'll tell you, basically, you know the answer that they want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you have to give the answer that they want, not the answer that probably is better, because at the end of the day, you got to pass the test.
That's right.
You know? Medical students face the same thing on their board exams. And I know because I've seen them and I've taken those exams. And pediatrics is the same way. Essentially, if someone wants, if there's any question about the benefits of contraception, that's going to be the right answer.
It's all of the above. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And actually, they've changed the MCAT. You guys probably know that, or the MCAT, which is your entrance exam to see if you can get into medical school. They changed the format recently. And I haven't seen these exams yet, but it's concerning because one of the sections, which is now worth a lot of, has a lot of weight, is an essay which they have to write, which deals with, quote, social and ethical issues. Mm. And those are graded subjectively. We can see where that might go.
You know, just to add a little levity to this, when I first took MCAT, I took MCAT once. That was it. And when I took it, the essay was you're younger than I am, Ashley, so you probably had
a lot younger. Yeah, a lot younger.
See, it's a lot better looking, too. when I took the test, it was a test case, you know, the essay. That was the very first time. And I sat in there with a woman that I'd taken.
Now, did you do that in hieroglyphics?
Yeah. Actually, you're right. Roman numerals and all that.
Sorry, go on.
That's all right. So I was sitting there, and everybody, you know, they kind of prepped us. I took a Kaplan course like a lot of people did. Right. And, you know, I took the prepared for it and so forth. And the thing was that there was a woman next to me who was writing it all in Spanish.
Oh, my gosh.
Because it didn't count for anything. The points don't count. Sort of like, you know, whose line is it anyway?
That's funny.
Yeah. So I know that it was going to get to a point where these were going to be really weighted.
Right.
And be serious about it.
Right.
So it really disturbs me, you know, and I had occasion, you're around lots more medical students than I am, Ashley, and maybe you are too, Tony. But I had a student in my office today from the Ohio State University, and he and I had very interesting conversations about this very article that we talked about. And he's a religiously inclined person, and he's like, this is very disturbing, you know, that these laws in Western countries are having such an impact.
Absolutely. You have to understand, like, medical students, when they come in at a lot of institutions, they are taught that you do what the patient asks. That the fundamental basis of medicine is not the patient's good seen in terms of, you know, Dr. Edmund Pellegrino, my mentor, talked about the four goods of medicine. A patient's spiritual good, their good as a person, they're flourishing as a person, their biomedical good, and their own conception of the good. And it seems like medicine and a medical education has inordinately focused on just those last two. Their biomedical good and their patient's own conception of good to the detriment of the other two, because no one wants to believe in a universal human nature, the idea that things are good for the person as a whole. And
well,
certainly,
you know,
no one wants to accept
the patient's bill of rights,
spiritual good.
Which I think is a great thing. But the thing is, they've taken it too far. And part of it reflected in my experience with medical students, Ashley and Will, is that they've now entered clinical stuff with the medical students on the very first day that they get into medical school, which is good because that's what the kids want more than anything else, but they don't have any tools.
Yeah.
So what they're left with is, what do you need, what do you want? And so they're taught from the very beginning to kind of be that servant. But it's not the right kind of servant.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah. Well, this is really disturbing. And like I say, I mean, we have a lot of very altruistic young people who are trying to get into medical school and nursing school and stuff like that, wanting to do the right thing. And yet, you know, here they are in this buzzsaw of you know, trying to figure out whether or not they serve the patient's purposes or they you know, violate their conscience.
I think what we have to do, you know, I know we're running out of time. We really need to. These are disturbing developments. We have to remind your listeners and those medical professionals that are listening, we need to strongly make the case that conscience is a human right that does not go away when you put on the white coat, and that the physician, the nurse, the pharmacist has as much of a right to seek the good for themselves as they are for seeking the good of the patient. You didn't give away your rights as a person because you became a doctor. You're not the slave of the patient.
Right.
You're the servant of the patient.
Right.
And you serve God first, of course, and your conscience first.
But actually, in that assumption, you're making the assumption that the medical profession, the vast majority of medical professionals that come into medical school and go out of medical school, they have the same value system that a good Catholic or a good ethical person would have. Remember, many of those people themselves think that the things that anyone in our sense would think is a bad thing, think it's good.
Yeah. I think our solution then is to really give them counterexamples and show them using the things that they believe in. What would happen if someone forced you to do this? I'll do that. I'll say, hey, if you were in a Catholic hospital or someone forced you to do that, and all of a sudden – the dynamic changes, right? Because they realize how important their conscience is to the way they operate in their daily life.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Well, or at least theoretically.
Yeah. Well, you know, Tony, this has been a great discussion. Ashley, I appreciate everything that you guys bring to this, and I invite you to come back every month because it is going to be, I think, an amazing adventure for all of us. So, and in the absence of Dr. Michael Parker, this is the Catholic Doctor Show, wrapping up a production of St. Gabriel Radio. We hope your week is happy, healthy, and holy. God bless you all.
The Catholic Doctors is a production of listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. Archives of The Catholic Doctors with Dr. Michael Parker and Dr. Will Turek are available at stgabrielradio.com.
Catholic Medical Association supports your right to know. The birth control pill has been available for over 50 years. When it was released to market in 1960, it was thought to be the miracle drug that would free women's lives and improve family life. However, the pill has major side effects for the woman, such as weight gain, depression, stroke, and heart attack. Modern methods of natural family planning are more than 95% effective and have no harmful effects on the woman or her marriage. To learn more about natural family planning, visit cathmed.org.